Well, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I want to first say thank you to Pastor Randy and Elizabeth for letting me come up here. So, my testimony, like probably many of y'all's, is not for the faint of heart, so please know it might be, I guess, rated R a little bit, but I'm going to try to keep those. So I want to first start off with saying God speaks to us and he says to us many, many things, even as a child. Who in here believes that God spoke to you as a child?
Amen.
Like you remember. Even if you didn't know who it was, you know who it was. So in Jeremiah, it tells us, before I formed you in your mother's womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you and I ordained you as a prophet to the nations. So something about that is everybody says, we don't know what our calling is. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. But it says right then and there, from before you were ever formed, you were set out to be a prophet. And if you look up the word prophet, it just talks about it prophesying, being a prophet. It talks about talking about the word of God, telling the truth and who God is to everybody that you see and come in contact with. So as an early age, sorry, guys. Am I? Is it me or y'all? Okay. So I want to start off with Proverbs 22, 5, and 6. And I know this is probably like a really weird place to start off, but in Proverbs, we learn a lot of things. So in Proverbs 5, it says, the paths of the wicked are snares and pitfalls, but those who would preserve their life stays from them. So let's read number 6. Number 6 is the most important for me. Start children off in the way that they should go, and even when they are old, they will not part from them. Excuse me. So I start with the scripture because, as you know, our life actually starts before we're born. The scripture in Jeremiah says he knew us before we were even formed. So that means our life is predestined from beginning, right? But we don't always see that, right? Because the people that are provided to us as parents, the people who raise us, it's up to them to teach us those things. So in verse 6, it says, obviously, you have to raise them up. So if you're like me, you probably may not have had the best set of parents. I know there's a lot of mixed families, step-parent, absent parent. And for me, I had both, I guess you could say. So the set of issues starts when we're very, very young. So as a child, we see things and we see life as just a series of events, things for what they are. We don't see a spiritual side of what's going on in our lives. So obviously, 6 is where the issues become started for us after we're born. And for me, it was the biggest thing. Because that's where you start to see that generation after generation after generation after generation, it just becomes passed down to you. Because who in here says they parent kind of like their parents, even though they swore they would never parent like their parents? Right? So we can all agree, you catch yourself hollering at your kid going, oh, I sound like my dad. I swear I'd never sound like that. But we do that, and we do it unconsciously. So I'm going to just tell you a little bit about my mom. My mom was brought up in a very racist family. Of course, it was in that time where everybody was just now kind of getting used to being together. But my mom was brought up to believe that everybody was different. There was this side and that side, and my mom was very different. She didn't feel that way. So she rebelled early on. And as a child, she did go to church as a young child, but she was molested at a very young age from the bus driver that drove her to church. Everybody would go in, he'd make her stay on the bus, and it happened for several years. She told her mom, and her mom told her, we're not telling anybody those things because then they're going to look at us a certain way, and we're not going to be looked at like that. So her mom ignored it, and finally she didn't have to go anymore, and that started a very, very violent, I want to call it a cancer inside of my mom, because she was taught to bury it deep. Don't talk about it. Don't tell anybody. You should feel ashamed. You should feel embarrassed, not the other way. So she became the victim that had to be silenced. But it wasn't even for her. It was for her family. So she carried something for her family that she didn't even realize she carried. So then I came along, and my mom got pregnant at 16, sorry, with my sister, who is half African-American and half white. The family was completely okay with taking care of the child until the child was born, and then they realized the baby was mixed. So they kicked my mom out to sit in the park. So that was very hard for her, and then she began to just latch on to anybody that would show affection. Anybody would, even if it was not the right affection, to show affection, because she was empty. And because of that, whenever I came along and I began to live life, I didn't know my biological father hardly at all. Until I was 3 years old, I never, ever met him. And then I had a stepdad come into the picture. And then my mom and my stepdad began to raise us. And what happens is, again, in Proverbs, start your children off as they should go. But because my mother was pushed into the situation in the church bus, she shunned God out of our lives. She believed, why am I going to teach my kids something that hateful, that hurtful, that's so disgusting? And so she swore she would never teach us those things, and she didn't. So I didn't hear about God until I was 15. But let me tell you, whenever I was 7 or 8, we had a guy that started taking care of us because my family was very poor. We lived off the government, housing, government assistance, all those things, because my mom ended up having 8 kids in total. It was a very, very tight family, but very lonely. I don't know how to explain that, but we were all just kind of our own people. We didn't socialize with each other. But this man, he began to babysit us at a very, very cheap price. And sorry, I get emotional over it still. So there was this man, and of course you're probably thinking, there was 6 girls, 2 boys. Why is this grown man babysitting little girls? I don't know if anybody in here is kind of like, oh yeah, I'll let this 30-year-old man who's babysitting for $20 a week babysit my little girls. So he had this game he would play after my parents left the house. He had this game he would play, and he called it Jaws. And we would all just run around on the floor, and he would catch us, and we'd bite our feet. But if you got caught, you had to go to bed. And I was always the first one caught. I don't know why. I do know now. But at the time, I didn't understand. I was so upset. Like, why am I always the first one? But now I learned that it was to put me to sleep so that I would be asleep so that he could come in later. And that went on for quite some time. And every time it got more intense, he would come into my room after everybody was asleep. And he would do whatever he wanted to do. And I'm thinking to myself, the first thing I want to do is tell my parents, right? And so I did that. And they called me a liar. And something happened to my mom during this time. She made a shift. She was a nurse practitioner, and she made a shift in her life. And my mom began to shut down. My mom wouldn't talk to me about it. My dad denied it, because this guy was good friends with my dad for years. So I became the black sheep. Pushed away, my mom wouldn't take me out. My dad was very, very hard on me. I used to have to wake up every morning and get his socks on, get his shoes on, help him pack his lunch. I mean, little. I used to be the one at 8, 9 years old giving him his diabetic shot. But they were very hard. I didn't go to friends' houses. I didn't stay the night anywhere. I had no friends. But I was lonely anyways. I was very recluse. But my mom began to change in her life, and she began to start drugs. And that led to all kinds of things. But see, I seen in the natural, because I didn't know any better, I seen in the everyday physical natural life these events that kept happening over and over. Until one day my stepdad came home early for some reason, and he walked into my room, and there I am with my pants down to my knees and this man in my bed with me. My dad chased him down the street. My mom was at work. And I thought to myself, something in me, because God tells us he created us, he knew us, he knows the number of hairs on our head. So something inside of me, I don't know what, I could say my conscience, I don't know, voices in my head tell me it's going to be okay, everything's going to change, it's going to be okay. The guy left, and a couple of months later, the guy comes back. My parents struggled for a babysitter. Living on government assistance, they couldn't afford anybody. So the guy comes back to babysit again. My heart was so broken. Because these people who use the word love, who say parents, to me, I didn't understand. But we never understand the struggle of the parents and what they go through on a daily basis, and the sacrifices they make, and the things and the reasons they do things in their head. But to me, I felt like my parents hated me and despised me because they allowed this man that destroyed me, my innocence. And that's what this is titled, is The Innocent. Because we spend our whole lives trying to help those who are innocent in nature, their children, our children. We try to keep them kids as long as we can because there's so much in the world they need to learn, but it can wait. And so this man comes back, and this time he didn't touch me. And I was so happy. But it didn't change that every single day I went to bed crying, that I went and hid when he was there. I remember building a tent in the backyard, a little fort. I was kind of like a tomboy, so I built this fort. And I remember when he would come and babysit, I would go and hide. And my parents had to find me because they kept calling out, Tamara, where are you? Where's Tamara? Tearing the house apart. And I actually fell asleep in there. But that's how scared I was, is I just feared every day. And so we moved to a new house. This guy, whose name I won't use just because. I thought everything was going to be different. We moved to a new house. This guy is gone. Things are going to start over, and I'm going to be able to be okay. I'm going to find peace with being okay. I'm not going to talk about it with anybody else. I'm not going to tell anybody. So I held on to this disgusting feeling. And when I say disgusting, you, at 8, 9 years old, how can you? You don't think that kids are that smart, but we are. We can be depressed. We can be angry. We can be lost at that age. And we don't see that sometimes. And so when we moved, I didn't play with the other kids. I didn't want to be around anybody. I began to isolate so bad that I got into a really deep depression at 9 years old. And I watched my parents give medication to my dad's mother every day. And they gave her this cough medicine that I watched them spray in her mouth. And I asked questions about it, and my mom said, you know, it's for this or that. She walked out. Well, one day I just got so bad. We had people over at the house, and everybody was just so happy. And I'm thinking to myself, how can they just be so happy? I couldn't be happy. And I went into the room, and I grabbed this chloraseptic spray. It was one of the, they don't make them like this big anymore, but they used to have these really big ones you could buy, and it was cherry flavored, and I drank the entire bottle. And people would say, oh, you don't know what you're doing. My mom said it was just because it tastes good. That's why I wanted it. I knew what I was doing. I didn't want to live. I didn't want to be a part of this world. It was harsh. It was cold. These people didn't care. It was self. Everybody was for themselves and just disgusted me. But I had this feeling in my soul that I was called to do so much more. And not knowing God, I didn't know anything about what I was going to do. So I drank this whole bottle, and they laughed at me. And I died in the ambulance, and they pumped my stomach 2 times. And finally, when I came to, the only thing that my dad said to me, and I'll never forget it, You're so stupid. Okay. For what? Like, I didn't understand. But again, I only seen the natural light. And so life kept going. After I got home from the hospital, I stayed in the hospital for several days. They did like a little watch. And my parents were so angry with me, like I was such an inconvenience, because they had to go up there and they had to pick me up and they had to go through counseling. They had to take me to this counseling. And I'll never forget, my parents coached me what to say, what not to say, so CPS didn't get called, so people didn't get involved. So I had to go this horrible route of just like saying nothing but saying something so they believe what I'm saying. It was horrible. So as life went on, I learned later on in my years something that's so important is John 10:10. And people read this. I know this is a very common thing, but I want to give it to you because it's very important. The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. The enemy comes to steal the innocence of that child. Because if he can stop it from the very beginning, because think about it. That song, I'm so glad y'all sang it. It said, "Come on, my soul." There's something inside that Satan's so scared. This little child can become so powerful. And so the only time he can attack is when there's a child and they're innocent. But let me tell you something. Eight years old, molested. 9 years old, suicide. 10 years old, I was watching my mom tear the house apart. My father would make me pack up every night. My mom wouldn't come home, and ride with him all over town to find her. I would hide his wallet. I became the referee over and over again. My mom tried to commit suicide. I walked in the kitchen after my dad just spewing these hateful, angry words at her one night. She finally came home after being gone for 3 days, and she sat on the edge of the couch, and all of a sudden she got silent. She had this look on her face, and she walks out of the room into the kitchen. And everybody's thinking, how does that have to do with taking somebody's innocence? I've now mentally had to become an adult. I have to watch, is my mom taking off with the money? Is she leaving in the car? Is my dad and her fighting? Do I have to shelter the other kids? There's 6 kids underneath me. So I have to get them all and keep them all hidden. So this day I watched my mom. She was so quiet, she went into the kitchen. And out of nowhere, I just got this feeling. And it was so strong that I had to get up and walk into the kitchen. And I seen her, she was standing with her back towards me and her hands in the sink, but I couldn't see her hands. So I walked up to her and I screamed, "Mom, what are you doing?" And she turns, and my dad used to butcher meat, and she had this knife that was about this long. One wrist is cut so deep that it's literally just limp. And she's holding onto this knife, trying to use the sink as an anchor as she cuts the other one. And that moment, my innocence felt so gone. I didn't know what to do. We didn't have phones in our house. We were poor. Landlines is all you had. There was no cell phones. And so I remember, I don't know how, I just always been this caregiver, this instinctive person to problem solve right on the spot. And now I know it's a gift, because I ran from house to house in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, banging. Somebody let me in, somebody opened the door so I can call an ambulance. I remember calling an ambulance finally, and getting back to the house, and I wrapped her hands with wet towels as tight as I could get him, and she sat on the porch until the ambulance showed up. And my dad left with her, and I spent the next 2.5 hours scrubbing the carpet and the kitchen and the sink, because my sisters and brothers weren't going to get up and notice what I had to notice. And so I sheltered them. And my mom began to shift in this darkness. That at 10 years old, she was so deep into that darkness. Because see, something now that I've learned is the situation with a guy that was molesting me when I was 8 triggered. So see, I told you my mom started drugs after that happened. Something triggered her from that situation, from her past. And it triggered her so fast that drugs were the only way to go. And she got so heavy into those drugs and so desperate. I don't know if anybody has any family members that have been in drug world. But when I tell you, you don't understand it until you understand it. You think to yourself, they told me they'd call yesterday. They told me they'd call tomorrow. And I haven't heard from them. It's been a month. And then they call and act like everything's fine. Like just nothing's missed. Didn't miss a beat. Let me tell you why. Because drugs, you have no time. No concept of time whatsoever. And so my mom began to get so desperate that my dad would hide his wallet, or I would hide his wallet, and then my dad would make me go with my mom. And so I would go with my mom so that she wouldn't run off, and I became her babysitter. And the first time it was kind of so subtle. We rode around all day and all night, and my mom had a drug counselor, but was my third grade teacher. And we drove around, and she was doing her drugs, pulled up to a store. And she yelled at me at the top of her lungs, I'm just 10. But she yelled, go in the store and get me some water. And I'm like, I don't want to go in the store. I'm so tired. I'm sitting in the back of the van, just exhausted from just riding around crying. Because I'm watching this demon possess my mom, this spirit. I'm looking at her ghost white face, black lips. She just looks like somebody I don't know. And when I came, she screamed. I was like, no, mom, I don't want to go in. I don't want to go in. We're in a bad neighborhood too. So she finally just turns around like she's going to come up. Y'all know what I'm talking about when you get that sandal come off and mom comes around the back. But hers was so much intense because it's drugs. And she screamed at me, you better go in right now. So I got up and I went in. That was the first time there was a man standing out waiting for me. And she had rented the van out. I thought it was just the van. But when we got there, I didn't get out. I was made to stay in. That was the first time that my mom had sold me. I don't know how much it was that first time. So that she could get high. So again, Satan will use the people around you to carry out his assignment. This is why it's so important to empty ourselves out. It's so important to heal ourselves, because we're not the only people that get tore down. It's our husband, our children, our parents, everyone that's around us, our church family, that get touched. Our words are so powerful. God created the earth with just his words. Satan wants to steal the innocence. He wants to kill our relationship. See, if he can make you hate God, if he can say, where was God when you were getting molested? Where was God when you were getting beat because your father was so angry and a drunk? Where was he? He wasn't there for you then. He ain't here for you now. That's what Satan wants us to believe. He wants to kill that relationship. Just like if he can use those people around you to do that, because everybody has free will, right? Because what good is it if you make, can you make your spouse love you? Does that mean anything? No. It's that unconditional willingness to love someone. And the world's watered down that word love. You say, oh, I love this song. I love this shirt. I love these shoes. Do we really love them, or do we just like them? Right? And Satan comes to destroy our purpose. Let me tell you, if he can keep you from being who you're supposed to be and never reach your purpose in life, just think about it. What if Jesus Christ, when he was tempted in the wilderness, if he never continued on, where would we be at today? So if he can steal that purpose, and if you think he tempted Jesus Christ, so why would he not tempt you, your siblings, your parents? Sometimes it's the siblings that get the problems and put those on to the brothers and sisters. But we spend our whole life carrying these things around. At 13, I remember coming, the younger kids, I took them to the park every summer. And this day, they opened up the park, they weren't going to open the pool, so I didn't take swimsuits. Something weird. And they opened it up halfway through the day, so I ran the kids home, which is about 5 city blocks, though most of it was open field. And I ran the kids home to get swimsuits. And everybody got dressed and everybody got changed, but there was a car there when we walked up, an old gold Cadillac. And I knew who the car was. It wasn't the first time I'd seen this man. It was my mom's drug dealer. And so we went in to get changed. And while now I went to the bathroom, I was the last one to get changed. I was in the bathroom. And my mom sent everybody away. Mind you, all these kids, none of them are over the age of 8. To walk 5 city blocks by themselves. When I came out of the bathroom, I was furious. And she kept telling me, it's okay, just go with him. You're just going to go get me a soda, and then you're going to come right back. No, go with him, and he'll just drop you off at the park, I promise. Been through this before. So finally, I agree, just get in the car. But I knew already in my heart that I wasn't going to get a soda, and I wasn't going to be dropped off with the kids. This time was different. See, I'm writing a book right now, and it's called Finding Purpose in My Pain. And this situation that I'm going to share is so important in my life because it made me see who I am. And this guy pulls up, and he drives right past my brothers and sisters, and I can see them finishing right through the field into the park. So I'm a little bit okay now because they're there. And he pulls up to this apartment complex, and there's like 20 people, I swear to you, standing outside, barbecuing, just hanging out in these apartments. And he pulls up, and I lock the door. He gets out, I lock the doors immediately, and I'm not getting out. So I lock it, he unlocks it. I lock it, he unlocks it. He goes around to the driver's side and unlocks it again and tries to pull me out. And he can't get me out that way. So finally, when he tries to unlock it, about the time he does, he catches the door. And I hold the door as hard as I could. And I couldn't. And he pulls the door open with me holding on to it. And I'm sorry, guys, if this is too much, please raise your hand and I will. But he pulls me out of the car, screaming my head off, bloody murder. I'm just a child. And he carries me over his shoulder. Thank you so much. He carries me over his shoulder. And he's a big guy. Big guy. Can't miss him. There's no way you can miss him. He looks like a African-American version of Jethro. I kid you not. He's got overalls on and he's got me over his shoulder. Kicking and screaming, he takes me up the stairs, into his apartment and throws me down. And for some reason, this time was different. I don't know what happened in his life, but he was angry. This isn't like before. And I knew that day if I didn't fight I was going to probably die. And so I fought so hard. And I sat there and I didn't know God yet. And I begged in my mind, I don't know who I was talking to, but I just remember saying, please, somebody knock on the door. Please, Mom, please knock on the door and come save me, please. Somebody knocked on the door. And when he opened it, it was my mother standing on the other side. And I thought to myself, I'm okay. I'm going to be okay. See, because these spirits had just manifested in her so great. We can't look at people in their addiction, in their pain, as human. We can't look at them as just flesh. Because there's so much going on in a person's life that it's spiritual. If you could just imagine being a puppet, each string is controlling every bit of your being. And that's what those drugs did to her. She walked past me, hair in a mess, lips busted. I've got a hickey and a bite mark where I'm bleeding on the side of my neck. And she walks past me, and you know what she said? I need another 20. You've been gone too long. She didn't even approach me. She didn't even look at me. He went to the freezer. He got her a 20. She went to the bathroom. I was crying. I was like, Mom, please just take me back home. And this guy gets so angry. He takes me to the room with my mom in the bathroom, literally from here to there away. And he continued. And he cut me so deep. He had a ring on. I'll never forget it. This huge ring on. And it cut me so deep. I still have the scar. Trying to get down my pants, that I had blood just dripping in these shorts that I had on. Finally, he gets a phone call and he leaves. And this, I believe, was the first time that I spiritually heard God. And I didn't know then, but I know now. And he said, get up and go. Now, go. So I told my mom, I'm leaving. She's banging on the door. You know, she opened the door and she said, we all have to grow up sometime. And slams the door on my face. But see, I forgave my mom. She's in my life today. It is so important because I ran home. She made me go get $20 in change. She had only quarters that she had stole off his dresser. So she made me go, parking lot full of people partying. Nobody noticed this tiny little girl, messed up hair, busted lip, and blood running down her leg. Not one person said a single word in this store. They walked past me like I was not even there. Not one person. Nobody goes through life without pain. But see, as we grow older, we bury that pain because it's easier for us. Because if we were abused, we don't want nobody to know we were abused. We don't want them to know that we were weak. Especially men. If you were abused as a child, even if it was from your father, from an uncle, sexually abused, you don't want to tell anybody. Because to them, you're weak. You can't fight for yourself. You can't do for yourself. And you refused, as you grew older, not to let anybody see you in that weak, vulnerable place. But guess what? Statistics show 76% of children that were abused by their parents will abuse as parents. That's statistics. That's not me. When we're little girls, we want this great wedding and this amazing husband and this perfect family. And as our innocence are taken, if we had to go through some things, some people don't even realize the things we go through. Being bullied, that's so hard for little girls. Being abandoned. My daughter is here. And for 10 years, she wasn't part of my life. And I'm blessed to have her back in my life. That's all through God. But you see, because of my problem and my pain, she was abandoned. She had to go through her abandonment issues. She had to go through her lack of love. She was had to go through man after man trying to fulfill something that I couldn't give her because of my problems. See, we don't think that we're doing it. But as I mentioned in the beginning, many of us discipline our children according to our parents, even though we don't think we are. And the moment you, boom, it clicks. We do the same thing with our pain. I didn't fit in as a child, so now I isolate. If you were abused, sexually abused, we tell ourselves that we're fine. Let me tell you something. Elijah, can you pass out those post-it notes, Faithlin, and pens? They're going to bring around a post-it note and a pen. But I want you guys to think about something. When you were a child, was your innocence stolen? Did you have to be forced? See, I was brought up with my dad is Hispanic. And in a household of Hispanics, the women take on a lot of the things, especially in the older generation. We take on the cooking, the cleaning, the helping with the kids. That's what we did. That's what we're supposed to do. But every time my parents fought, I became the referee, unconsciously. They didn't say, hey, Tamara, you stay right here and make sure we don't fight. That's not what they did. But the calling inside of my heart, a lot of us get mad because we have these great hearts, these big hearts. And I know because one of my sisters here in this church body that I've spoke with, she has this huge heart. And sometimes we get angry with this huge heart. We get angry because we say, God, why do I have this heart? Why do I have this thing? But that thing that you went through as a child, as an innocent child, is more than likely your calling. You want to know where your purpose is. Find where your pain is. Because there is purpose in that pain. Because it says God will use all things. He didn't say when you were born that, oh, the moment he created you, sorry, Tamara, but you're going to have to be molested and raped and sold and everything else and beat on. But that's just going to be your life. That's not what God did. See, it wasn't my control. It was the free will that he gave to others. So their sins became my problem, so I thought. But it's not meant to be like that forever. There's always a season. There was a season that we were to cry. There was a season that we were to isolate. But there's a season where you become victorious, not the victim. And so, see, Satan knows as long as he can take that one thing. See, you think you've gotten rid of it, but really it's sitting in a vault. So nobody looks at you crossways. So nobody knows that you're weak. So nobody sees that you're disgusting. There are things, you look at your husband, that you have these things that you do. You're snippy and you're easily ticked off. And you feel like you got to control things. And you do these things because of a problem that's deep down in this vault that is buried. Let me tell you something. God says, I put a seed in you. But how many times if you set something outside in the grass, does the grass grow under that thing that you set down? It doesn't. So you may have put it in a vault and buried it so deep thinking nobody can touch it. Nobody can see it, but I'm sorry to tell you, it's spews through you like bacteria from a virus that is eating you up. And you think, oh, it doesn't matter, but as soon as you cough, or you speak, or you touch something, that virus grows. Your kids see you snippy with your husband. The kids see you shut your wife out because you think, if I just don't care anymore, I'm tired. It's because men just want to fix things. And if they don't know how to fix them, they shut down. It's a mechanism. It's a way to cope. They don't know how to communicate. Most men, my husband sometimes, I have to say, babe, you got to talk to me. You got to come to me. You got to tell me what's going on because we need to communicate. I didn't trust men for the longest time. But let me tell you something. That vault is sitting deep inside of you. If you were molested, if you were abused, if you were abandoned. See, some of us, we have step-parents, and some people are foster kids. There never leaves that moment that you don't want to know why. Why didn't my parent do this? Why wasn't I enough to make my dad not put his hands on me? Why was I not enough to make my family stay together? Why was I not enough for my family to stay sober? Why was I not enough that my parents didn't want to keep me? There's always that thing. Nothing's growing under the vault. You keep seeing the cycle that you're on fire for God and then it dies. It's because you got to fix it. You have to. It's so important. Because Satan came to steal that seed from you so that tree wouldn't grow, so your children couldn't benefit from that tree. And I gave you a post-it note. Everybody has a post-it note, and you don't have to do it. This is completely up to you. But in a minute, Pastor Randy's going to come up and start praying. We're going to have the prayer team come up as well, but I want you to write down on that post-it note. You can write a name. You can write a memory. You can just write a word. But something, every one of us has that thing that we've held on to so hard, that we battle with so much. When people aren't around, we just think about it. Like for me, it was as long as you couldn't walk behind me because I was in fear. I had no friends because if they got close to me, they could see the dirtiness that I felt. As an addict, I got so mad at myself. Why can't I just stay sober? But everybody has that thing. We get heartbroken and we shut everybody else out. So I want you to take a moment and write on that paper, and we're going to bring it up to the front. We're going to shred it and we're going to give it away, because today is the day that you heal. Because if you don't and you continue to hold on to it, there's no reason to be embarrassed. I'll make everybody close their eyes and look at the floor. If you want me to and you feel more comfortable, I swear we'll bow heads. But this is between you and God. And this is not just for you, but it's for your spouse and for your kids and for the rest of your life. Because if somebody doesn't break the curse, if somebody doesn't stand up and fight, then you leave it for your children to do the fighting. And it's so important, because it's you that have to stand up and deal with the issues that you've been carrying. Because if you don't get your purpose, it makes it so much harder for your children, for your spouse, because it tells you how important our spouses are. But I want to go ahead and I want to start to close. Callan, can you come up, please? If you ever lost your innocence, if you feel like you couldn't be a child, if you feel like you need to heal, if you feel like you want to, for me, what I did when I did this for myself. I did this in prison, and you guys will hear about that later, but I wrote down the names of my abusers, the things that made me feel like a victim. And I went and I cried out to God. And I took this and I called out each thing and I ripped it up and I flushed it. So today we're gonna do the same thing. We're gonna take those papers and we're gonna regain our victory. We're not victims anymore. Our kids aren't going to be victims of our problems. So I want you guys, if you would, everybody bow your heads so that way they can do this in private. This is such an intimate moment. Such an important moment. Today, we're not leaving with what we came with. Today, we're going to let fear go. We're going to let anger go. We're going to let depression go. Because those are things of Satan, that the world has made it seem like it's okay to have anxiety. We have a pill for that. It's okay to be depressed. It's normal. We have a pill for that. That's not what God did for us. So you can bring those papers up. Bring them up now. And I want you to leave them. You can leave them at the altar.